Imagine a billionaire stepping into your local public school, dropping a massive check, and suddenly controlling like 50% of the voting power on how that school is actually run.
Yeah, it sounds completely like fiction, doesn't it?
Right. But today's deep dive into the Western Cape Provincial School Education Act reveals this is actually a very real mechanism. We are looking at this dense 1997 legal text, heavily updated over the years, obviously, that acts as a dramatic blueprint for governing, funding, and policing a massive education system.
It really is basically an operational manual for a high-stakes social experiment. The province is attempting to aggressively balance strict, unyielding boundaries with radical new governance structures.
And the most radical part has to be the introduction of these collaboration schools and donor-funded public schools. The act literally allows an operating partner like an educational nonprofit or a financial donor to hold up to half the voting rights on a public school's governing body.
Exactly. Up to 50%, which is huge.
I mean, that feels a lot like a corporate merger. Is the province basically bringing in activist board members to orchestrate a corporate takeover of a struggling public asset?
Well, I wouldn't go as far as calling it a corporate takeover, mostly because the state still holds the ultimate purse strings, you know?
Yeah.
Think of it more as a heavily guarded joint venture.
Okay, a joint venture. How so?
So the province is trying to inject private sector efficiency and resources into failing infrastructure,
right,
but without fully privatizing the land or the jobs. In practice, the state continues to pay the baseline educators' salaries.
Oh, but the outside partner actually manages the day-to-day stuff.
Right. The operating partner manages the day-to-day operations, curriculum enhancements, facility upgrades, things like that.
But mathematically, if a donor has 50% of the votes and the parents and teachers hold the other 50%, you are setting the stage for a deadlock.
Oh, for sure.
How does a school actually function if they disagree on a major policy?
Well, the act actually anticipates that exact friction. If there is a tie on the governing body, the decision just gets kicked down to a general meeting.
Oh, so the parents step in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The parents actually break the tie. So the community retains a vital veto power. But day to day, I mean, the nonprofit or donor wields massive influence over the school's direction.
Right. And when you have millions in private money mixing with public funds in these semi-autonomous joint ventures, the risk for corruption or mismanagement skyrockets. You can't just hand over that much voting power and walk away.
You absolutely can. When you decentralize power and empower local governing bodies to sign contracts and manage massive budgets, the central government loses direct sight of the money.
Which brings us to the aggressive counterbalance they created, right? The school's evaluation authority.
Yes. And their chief evaluator acts as an auditor with serious teeth.
Wait, the text explicitly states that if they suspect financial mismanagement, they have the power to enter a school completely unannounced and seize financial records.
They do.
That feels aggressively heavy-handed for a local primary school. Like an unannounced raid, why not just mandate a strict quarterly audit?
Well, and because a polite request for an audit gives a corrupt administrator 48 hours to run the paper shredder. This is a strict trust but verify mechanism.
Ah, I see.
Yeah. The unannounced entry isn't about intimidating teachers in the classroom. It's a targeted mechanism to secure physical receipts and server hard drives before evidence of siphoned education funds can vanish.
Wow. And that iron grip on the adults managing the money directly mirrors the rigid behavioral boundaries the act places on students too. Accountability flows all the way down.
Absolutely. It establishes absolute zero tolerance zones.
Yeah. Like principals can mandate non-invasive drug tests like urine screens based purely on reasonable suspicion.
Yes. Plus there are strict bans on dangerous weapons, corporal punishment, hazing rituals, and a total prohibition on political campaigning during school hours.
But reading through those restrictions, I noticed a glaring double standard.
Oh, the alcohol loophole.
Yes. While the environment is completely sterilized of politics and hazing to protect the kids, the act explicitly carves out a loophole allowing alcohol on school premises for staff functions. Provided the head of department approves, of course.
I know, it feels contradictory, but it actually captures the core tension of modern school management. Legally, you are mandated to engineer an ultra-safe, strictly controlled sanctuary to protect minors.
Right, a complete safe zone.
But pragmatically, you're also running a normal workplace for adult professionals who might want a glass of wine at a Friday afternoon retirement party. The law has to stretch to accommodate both realities within the exact same physical building.
So we have a sanctuary for kids, a joint venture for donors, and a highly policed financial hub for administrators. This act is just a massive balancing act for you to consider the next time you drive past a local school.
It really is a fascinating piece of legislation.
But I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over. We talked about wealthy donors holding 50% of the voting power. If that donor's educational philosophy inevitably clashes with the local parent's cultural values, who actually wins? Ultimately, whose school is it?